Our first paper is by Professor Maureen Durkin. She's professor of population health sciences and professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin. She interestingly has a PhD in anthropology, but has worked predominantly in the epidemiology of neurodevelopmental disabilities. And her talk is entitled Trends in the Prevalence of Intellectual Disability and Autism Spectrum Disorder. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you for organizing this panel and for the outstanding keynote address to kick this all off. And I'd also like to thank INSAR and our Salt Lake City hosts for another great INSAR meeting. So I'm not sure how to begin the slides, do I? Guess I should have worked that out. So I would just say that the overall thesis for my talk today is that despite all of our efforts in studying the epidemiology of autism, we still don't fully understand the reasons behind the dramatic increase in the prevalence of autism over the past 25 years. But I think we can gain some insights into this by comparing these trends in autism with those of a related neurodevelopmental disability, namely intellectual disability. And I think, in general, the field of autism research can benefit by taking a page from the field of intellectual disability research by shifting from a disorder perspective to more of a disability perspective, and I'll explain this further as we go along. Now, in organizing the panel, Richard posed four questions to us that he was hoping that we would address in our comments, and I just want to say that my own comments will probably focus or be most relevant to his third and fourth question, which are highlighted here. One is autism a disease, a disability, or an aspect of the normal range of human variation? And the fourth question is autism singular? Is it one condition, or are the dimensions of autism outcomes of a common set of developmental pathways that are shared by all human beings? So I think these two questions I would focus on mostly. And I'd like to do this by summarizing some key differences. First of all, some key similarities. I have about five similarities between the epidemiology of intellectual disability and autism. And then I'm going to describe about five or six key differences, I think, between these two conditions. So the first similarity is that both autism and intellectual disability are neurodevelopmental disabilities. And by this, I mean that they entail functional limitations that result from impairments or damage to or abnormalities in the developing nervous system. And in intellectual disability, the core impairment is in intelligence, whereas in autism, it is in social interaction and social reciprocity and other behaviors. And I think because they are neurodevelopmental disabilities, for both conditions, early intervention is considered absolutely critical for ensuring optimal outcomes, given the malleability of the developing brain. And another major similarity between intellectual disability and autism is that, no, to answer Richard's question, they aren't one condition. And we know this really well in intellectual disability, where research has been going on for a longer time into the etiology. And what's summarized in this slide is on the left column are the major categories of causes of intellectual disability. And these, and by the way, probably half of the cases in the population are still of unknown cause. But of those with a known cause, they fall into these broad categories which range widely from inherited and de novo genetic factors to infections of the brain, toxic exposures, and so on and so forth. And then within each of these broad categories, there's many different specific causes of intellectual disability. And it's interesting that many of these specific causes, tuberous sclerosis, for example, or Fragile X syndrome, are also known causes of autism. And so it's not surprising, you know, that they that they share many of the specific causes, even though they have distinct definitions and so on. Another similarity between autism and intellectual disability is the large overlap in the population. And in other words, they're distinct. It's like a Venn diagram, and I did the best I could here with a PowerPoint. But these data are from a publication just out last month in PLOS from the MADSPA data set with Kim Van Narden and colleagues. And it's a unique study because they have been following the prevalence of both intellectual disability and autism for many years in the metropolitan Atlanta area. And so it's one of the rare examples we have where we can actually quantify the prevalence of both conditions and their overlap. And what these data show, what they found was that the frequency in the population of both intellectual disability and autism spectrum disorders among 8-year-old children is actually identical. It's about 13.5 per 13.6 per thousand, or about 1.3% of 8-year-old children in metropolitan Atlanta have autism, and about 1.3% have intellectual disability. And there's a great overlap in the about almost 40% of them overlap, where they have both conditions. So there's another similarity. And then in terms of the epidemiology of the two conditions, the male-female ratio stands out. This has long been known in intellectual disability, where there's a male excess, and much of this is attributed to X-linked disorders, which we now understand fair amount. The difference, so the similarity with autism is that both excess prevalence in males, but the difference is that in autism, I don't think we really understand the reason behind this at all. It doesn't seem to be explained by X-linked conditions alone. And the other difference is that in autism, this male-female ratio seems to have been increasing over time as the prevalence of autism is increasing in the population. Another similarity between the two conditions is that they share many risk factors, especially perinatal risk factors. And what's shown in this slide, and on the very left, the set of bars, is for the birth cohort overall. These are data from the ADAM network, which is able to monitor the prevalence in the population of autism alone without intellectual disability, autism with intellectual disability, and then intellectual disability alone in some populations. And what it shows is that if you just compare the autism only to the birth cohort, you can see that perinatal risk factors are elevated in the autism. So if you just were to look at those first two sets, you'd say that each of these perinatal factors, preterm birth, small for gestation age, and so on, are risk factors for autism. But then when you move over on the graph to look at autism and intellectual disability, they're even more pronounced. And then you move further to just the intellectual disability population, and that's even much higher. So they share the same risk factors, but in terms of these perinatal exposures, they're even much stronger for intellectual disability than they are for autism. Other ones include parental age, also a shared risk factor for both conditions. But those are the similarities. Now I want to point out some differences between them. And the first here is the degree of stigma. Now, after hearing Richard this morning, I guess I have to modify this somewhat, that there is a similarity to where both conditions have shared historically a great deal of stigma. But I think there's a much even greater amount of stigma associated with intellectual disability historically than there has been with autism. And in fact, the terminology used for intellectual disability there's this term called the treadmill of euphemisms. Because of the stigma, we have to change the name of the condition every few years, and the organizations devoted to the study of intellectual disability have to change their names every couple of decades or so just to address this issue. Another difference between the two conditions or the two disabilities is that I think in terms of the outcomes as we transition into adulthood, all indications are that the degree of social isolation is much greater for young adults with autism than with intellectual disability. And this comes from really important study by Paul Shattuck's group, led by Gail Orsmond, where they were able to follow the national sample of the national transition cohort in the United States. These were high school children in special education for autism or intellectual disability, and they followed them into young adulthood, into their early 20s. And that what they found was that the degree of social isolation, as I mentioned, was much greater for individuals with autism than for intellectual disability. Another big difference between the two is in terms of the racial and ethnic disparities. At least in the United States, a prominent finding in every epidemiologic study of autism is that we seem to see higher prevalence in white, non-Hispanic children, and lower in Hispanic, and lower, much lower, too, in African Americans relative to whites. And this difference has persisted over time. As we see the increase in autism prevalence, we see this disparity just persist. In intellectual disability, and these data also come from the Van Naarden study just out last week, we see the opposite, pretty much almost the opposite pattern, at least between blacks and whites, where the highest prevalence of intellectual disability is in black children in the United States, and the lowest, in this case, is in whites. This same difference between autism and intellectual disability we see in the relationship with social class. The association between intellectual disability and low socioeconomic status is one of the most prominent features of the epidemiology of intellectual disability. Everywhere in the world where it's been studied, we find this association. Whereas in autism, there's much less consistency, but at least in the United States and in Britain and in Australia, there's been consistent finding of higher prevalence in the high social class. So this is a very different, completely different pattern in epidemiology of the two different conditions. And then another difference, of course, is in the trends over time. What's summarized here is the trends in the prevalence of autism since the first epidemiologic study published in 1967 up through the more recent studies. And you can see this dramatic, steep increase in prevalence over time. When we look globally, the world literature for intellectual disability, we see much less of evidence of a trend over time. What we do see is, and this is based on research largely using the 10 questions and other open source tools relying on international collaboration, we've been able to actually study the prevalence of intellectual disability in low-income countries and in high-income countries. And what we see is a much higher prevalence in low-income countries. That's the most prominent feature globally rather than any kind of trend over time. Another, the differences in trends in intellectual disability with autism has raised the question of whether it, and this is particularly true in the United States where we have administrative data on the number of children with autism versus the number with intellectual disability, has raised a question about whether this is diagnostic substitution or like a naming phenomenon where we used to call it intellectual disability, now we're calling it autism. And I think there's some, it's hard to dispute that possibility that this is what's going on. These data are from special education counts of children in the U.S. In intellectual disability versus autism. But you can also see it in world literature. The Global Burden of Disease Project, funded by the World Bank and sponsored by World Health Organization, a huge effort to quantify the global burden of disease. And you can go to the website and plug in a disease or a disorder, and it'll give you the projections over time in terms of what the prevalence and change is. And if you put in autism, you get an upward trend line. You put in intellectual disability and you get a downward trend line. So it isn't just a U.S. phenomenon. Also, if you look at the PubMed literature, I just typed in the keywords autism and then separately intellectual disability or mental retardation. You can see these lines cross here too. And by 2007, well, the earliest time period here, 1995, there were three or four publications in intellectual disability for every publication in autism. By 2007, those lines had crossed. I mean, and now we've seen a much more interest in research in autism than in intellectual disability. we also see this change difference in the sort of the reduction in intellectual disability within studies of autism. And this is a summary from Mayada Elsabad's paper, which reviewed the international literature on autism prevalence. And what it shows is that over time, as we see the prevalence of autism increasing worldwide, the increase is strongest in that group without intellectual disability, without that co-occurring intellectual disability. Within the population with intellectual disability, much less evidence of a increase over time. We see a similar thing in the ADAM network data in the United States, where we've been able to monitor since 2000 the proportion of children with autism in the population who also have an intellectual disability or IQ under the cutoff of 70. And we can see that that proportion has been declining over time during this same period when the prevalence of autism overall is increasing. Now, there are a number of theories about the relationship, the overlap between autism and intellectual disability. But I think these trends in prevalence may be supporting the third one listed here. So first of all, the reason for the overlap could be that they're both associated with common underlying pathology that could either result in one or the other or both combined. And the other thought out there is that intellectual disability itself is the cause of the impairments in social functioning which result in autism. And then thirdly, it's the idea that autism is the underlying factor that it interferes with intellectual development. And this could operate in two different ways, I think. One is that the actual autism impairments could interfere with intellectual stimulation and brain development, so result in low IQ in that way. Or it could be just that our measures of IQ are off in autism because we're unable to measure the actual IQ given the behavioral impairments. And I think when we look at the trends over time, if intellectual disability was causing autism, so to speak, we might see as intellectual disability declines a decline in autism, but we're not seeing that. Instead, what we should see both in the CDC's ADAM network data, which is shown on the left here, and in the recent MADSPA paper, what we see over time is that both groups are increasing, the prevalence of autism with intellectual disability and the prevalence without. It's just that the proportion without intellectual disability is increasing, but both are increasing over time. And I think it's helpful to think about our conceptualization of intellectual disability to understand this further, but basically it is conceived of in terms of a normal distribution of IQ in the population, and that normal distribution is calculated by after removing known causes of intellectual disability. And so we have to really realize there's a whole separate population of children with known conditions superimposed on that. And I think what we've seen in intellectual disability over time is that we are actually able to reduce the occurrence of those known causes of intellectual disability, and there's been much written about this since in the U.S., the post-JFK era, where we actually figured out how to prevent a number of causes of intellectual disability. There's also possible that the prevalence of intellectual disability is actually decreasing in the population, and it could be related to the Flynn effect, where we find that every 10 years or so we have to recalculate the IQ scores because we're becoming more intelligent. So I think that what could be happening is that process of intellectual improvement is occurring over time, but not something comparable in improvement in social communication and social reciprocity. Or whatever, the improvements in IQ are making more obvious the impairments in social interaction. But these data, again, from the recent MADSPA study, show that over time, if we separate out the three groups, intellectual disability alone, autism with intellectual disability, or autism without intellectual disability, we see that both of the autism groups are increasing, whereas intellectual disability seems to be decreasing over time in the population. And I wonder sometimes if these this part of the progress in intellectual disability has come from adopting a more of a disability perspective than a disorder perspective, and this is where I think autism maybe could learn something from intellectual disability. But basically, we in the field of intellectual disability, we've had to change terminology over time. We can't use the word mental retardation anymore. The new word is intellectual disability, and interestingly, in the DSM-5, you can see that they want to use the word disorder, but because of federal law in the United States, they have to use the word intellectual disability. And I want to just summarize here some of the key differences between these terms, disorder and disability. In disorder, the focus is more on an incapacity or a lack in the individual. Also, disorders are considered rare events, and the focus is on impairment, mainly, with a little bit on functioning. Whereas in the disability perspective, the individual's lack of functioning is thought of as a result of an interaction between their own impairments and the society and context in which they live. And so the focus there, then, is just as much on even more on participation in society and functioning than it is on the impairments per se. Also, within the disability framework, to answer Richard's question, the focus, I think, is it is definitely a part of a common human trait that we all will, most of us will experience. We're lucky enough to live long enough, we will all be experience disabilities at some point. This idea of the difference between disorder and disability is codified now in the World Health Organization's International Classification of Functioning. And I think in autism, which separates out impairment, functioning, and participation in society. And I think the difference in autism, the focus of most of our research has been on just the impairment, whether it's the underlying pathology causing these or the treatments and how to rid the child of those impairments. Much less research is on the functional status. We don't even know really how to classify severity in autism. Much less focus, other than emerging work, on the participation and the transition to the adulthood and those kind of things that we care about. And then just in closing, this change from a shift from a disorder to a disability perspective is also very much consistent with the United Nations efforts to see disability from a human rights perspective. It's also consistent with this more of a focus that it's encouraging to see in autism, thinking about the workforce, not just diagnosing in childhood, but what about the long-term outcome, and is there going to be a world for that child where they can work and be part of society. Intellectual disability has been focusing on this for much longer, I think, than autism, so we have much to learn. So, and just in conclusion, I'd say that the recent rises in the prevalence of autism have corresponded with declines in intellectual disability and in the percentage of cases of autism that have intellectual disability. There are a number of possible explanations for this, but I think it can include actual rises in IQ and maybe to some extent less intellectual disability over time, but we still don't understand what's driving the increase in autism. So with that, I'll close, and thank you very much.